Hey, also, here's the thing. I'm giving a speech to the Tarrant County Libertarian Party on April the 28th. That's Saturday, April the 28th, from 2 to 4 Central Time up there in Fort Worth. So if you're anywhere near the 200 square miles of concrete known as Dallas-Fort Worth, head on out there and I'll see you. It'll be cool. I'll sell you a book. Oh, you can find out all about it at eventbrite.com. Oh, and I guess I'll write up a blog entry, too, at the Libertarian Institute, and at scotthorton.org.
Sorry, I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again. You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
Well, we ain't killing their army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, Ben, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you all, introducing the great anti-war activist, Cindy Sheehan, from the website Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.blogspot.com. Welcome back to the show, Cindy. It's been way too long. How are you?
Oh, gosh, Scott. Thank you. I know it's been really long. We go back, way back to my early days, not too long after Casey was killed. So it's really good to talk to you again.
Yeah. Well, so for people who don't know, and I'm sure you come across this too, so much time has passed. That was 13 years ago now when we met, I guess 14 years since his death. There are a lot of young people who really did not live that history. You know, they were just kids in school or whatever at the time and don't really know the story of Iraq War II at all. They may have heard of you, but they don't know your story. So can you tell us a little bit about Casey?
Well, you know, Casey joined the military in the year 2000 when he was 21 years old. He was my oldest son, just a real good kid. I don't know many parents who would describe their children as bad kids, but, you know, Casey was an Eagle Scout. He was devoted to service. He worked at the church, volunteered at the church to be an altar server till he was 18. Then he was doing different kinds of ministries, and he got his associate in arts degree at the community college before he joined the military. And then, so that was in 2000. And then pretty much, you know, the U.S. On September 11, 2001, I almost said the U.S. was attacked, but I'm not sure, you know, still what happened that day. The U.S. was attacked, but there's a lot of course, controversy and, we're all still wondering what actually happened that day, because there's never been a full and transparent investigation about the events on 9/11. The U.S. then attacked Afghanistan in October of 2001, and then Iraq in March of 2003, and then Casey was killed in Iraq as a member of the 1st Cavalry in the army on April 4th, 2004. So we never believed in the wars. We didn't believe the lie. And when I say we, I believe my I'm talking about my family. I'm talking about Casey. We didn't believe all the hype that led to the invasions. You know, Casey openly said that the people of Iraq were not his enemy before he left. And then he was killed just like slightly a week after he got to Baghdad in 2004.
People may be familiar with the miniseries that came out last year, The Long Road Home. I watched the first part of it because a friend of mine actually helped build the set up there at Fort Hood. But I didn't watch the whole thing. Did you watch it? Were you unhappy with the portrayal?
I couldn't watch it. How could anybody watch the events even if they're fictionalized? Not only was it hard, I mean, I was trying to watch the World Series, Scott. The Dodgers were in the World Series for the first time in a long time. I was born in Los Angeles. I've been a Dodger fan my entire life, but every commercial, it was about that day. It was really, really hard. It's about April 4th. And the person who wrote the book that it was based on, Martha
Raddatz.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she interviewed me for the book, and she like completely ignored everything that I said, and she wove a very deceitful tale. But of course, she is part of the whole military-industrial complex media, military-industrial media complex.
Yeah.
And the thing is about this, Scott, is that none of the families of the people who died even knew that this was in production. You know how I found out? I found out because I like put my name in Twitter, and the woman who played me was talking about it. And I was like, what the hell is this?
Wow.
Yeah. She didn't, the production did not reach out to any of the families. I heard from her. She called my ex-husband. He was also very upset, and all, you know, the families I'm in contact with were upset, and she called him, but then she emailed me and to say, hey, Cindy, I just want to let you know this is happening right before it aired. And she said, you know, just really like crap, you know, crappy things about, I'm a grandma too. I hope you're enjoying your grandchildren. Like that is somehow going to obviate our feelings about this. So yeah, it was really extraordinarily poorly done. Plus, it was just a pack of lies. I mean, I understand she wrote in her book that the people of Iraq were using old people and young people as, you know, human shields. I've spoken to, and like the First Cavalry was somehow provoked into this action. I've spoken to people, Iraqi people and other U.S. soldiers that basically said that the First Cavalry was taking over they called it Camp War Eagle. It was a forward operating base. They were taking over the command, and they just wanted to go around the community and express their, you know, show the people of Iraq who the new bullies were in town. And 8 U.S. troops were killed that day, but hundreds of Iraqi people were killed. And to dehumanize the people of Iraq that way, like they didn't care about their young people and their old people, is really terrible. And it just further, as you know, it just further rationalizes these wars, that somehow they are just and they are necessary, when they're just, as we know, built on lies and for profit and for spreading the U.S. evil empire.
Yeah. I mean, that's really too bad to hear all that. I mean, it's not surprising about Martha Raddatz that she would do something like that, take a story like this and you know, try, in other words, you know, really take advantage of your situation for her.
Well, do you remember, Scott, when people were always attacking me for profiting off of my son's death?
Yeah, actually put your name in Google News or in DuckDuckGo news search, and it pulled up an article from 2005 by Ben Shapiro about what garbage you are and what a hero George Bush is for spreading freedom to the world. People are always asking me, gee, why is this guy so bad on foreign policy? I think he was born that way.
Right. And then it's interesting that as we speak, the first lady of this horrible family, Barbara Bush, recently passed. And we're not supposed to say anything bad about the dead, but this woman married a war criminal, gave birth to at least 2 war criminals. And she they say she's classy, but before I think it was like real when the U.S. was invading, or her son was invading Iraq, the U.S. Empire. She said that she didn't want to hear about body bags because she didn't want to hurt her beautiful mind or something like that. And then she said the people, the refugees for Katrina, were better off being stuffed into the Astrodome or the Superdome or whatever. I mean, just a horrible person. And she was 92. She lived almost four times longer than my son got to live. So excuse me if I'm not shedding any tears over her demise.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even believe that's a news story, really. Who cares about Barbara Bush, for Christ's sake? Like you're saying, if there's anything to remark about her, it's about how absolutely cold and psychopathic she was. I don't want to waste my beautiful mind thinking about body bags. In fact, the statement was, it's not relevant.
Right.
So yeah, of course it's not relevant if you're a Bush.
Right.
You know?
And her death isn't relevant either.
I saw a picture of George W. with the Crown Prince Bin Salman the other day with this huge grin on his face. He doesn't have a care in the world, George W. Bush. Not a care in the world.
Right. And then we have this situation, Scott, where liberal Democrats are, you know, they're reviving his image because he's against Trump, so he must now be a good person. And then I see Barack Obama and his first lady expressing regret over the death of Barbara Bush and how the Bush family have been such dedicated public servants. What a load of freaking crap that is. I mean, dedicated to the Bush family.
I mean, Obama is like Dick Cheney's second cousin or something, right? So
yeah, dedicated to the deep state. I mean, George H.W. Bush was in on the founding of the CIA. It just really is an extraordinary time we live in.
Hey, y'all, Scott here. Here's how to support the show. First of all, buy my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan. The audiobook is now available. If you like this show, you'll love the audiobook, I guess, or something. Sign up at patreon.com. You want to incentivize me to do more interviews all the time? Sign up at patreon.com, and through the magic of multiplication tables, I'll make a living doing anti-government propaganda for you here. Sign up for my YouTube channel. It happened, finally. We're living in the future now where it's a done thing. All 4,600 and something interviews are up at youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. Thank you for your decade worth of patience on that issue. And hey, sign up for the RSS feeds at scotthorton.org or at Libertarian Institute. We got a lot of other great podcasts there at the Libertarian Institute as well. So check all that out. And then find out all about how to donate to the show at scotthorton.org/donate. For your PayPal kind of one-off donations, for $20, you can get the audio book. For $50, I'll send you a signed copy of the paperback of Fool's Errand. For a $100 donation to the show, you get a silver QR code commodity disc. It's the coolest kind of currency I've ever heard of. And anyone who donates, and this is just for this month only, for what's left of it, anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show gets a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think Libertarian audiobooks. Find out all about that at scotthorton.org. And yes, I accept Zencash and Bitcoin Cash and Litecoins and all those different kinds of digital currencies there as well. If you hate holding on to those digital currencies and you want to get rid of them all, send them to me. And hey, if you read the book and you liked it, or you listened to the audiobook and you liked it, or if you like the show, give me a good review on Amazon, on Audible, on iTunes and Stitcher and those kinds of things. Thanks. All right, so now back to, well, not the long road home, but the story of what really happened there that day. Uh-huh. It's notable to me, you and I may have talked about this before. I'm sure I probably brought it up because I remember, I don't have a source for this. I actually have looked for it before online on YouTube and whatever, and I can't find it. But I remember very well Congressman Bob Dornan from California saying on whatever news channel it was, that yes, it's a heroic and wonderful and brilliant decision that the provisional authority made here in shutting down Muqtada al-Sadr's newspaper. Because right. in Muqtada al-Sadr's newspaper, he's agitating against the United States. And right. so, yes, you know, here in America, we believe in free speech. And yes, we claim we're spreading democracy in the American way to Iraq. But in this case, we really don't like what this newspaper is saying. So we have to shut it down. And the next day was when this fight broke out in Sadr City. Mm-hmm. Where then Casey was sent in to try to rescue the guys who had gotten themselves pinned down and was killed. And of course, Thomas Young, who I met at Camp Casey in 2005 and who did, you know, there's a movie about him and did all this great work, was shot in the spine. He was one of the ones that your son was sent to rescue there. And, you know, not to get into the weeds or whatever off track, but the entire Iraq War II was fought for Muqtada al-Sadr and the United Iraqi Alliance of the Shiite dominant factions. And America fought an eight-year war. George Bush fought an eight-year war to kick all the Sunnis out of Baghdad and turn at least the entire east of that country and south of that country over to basically Muqtada al-Sadr's political alliance. So the fact that they were picking a fight with the least cooperative member of the Shiite coalition just goes to show that, you know, they really had no idea what the hell they were doing over there. You know, they fought Sadr in, I guess, in Najaf at the same time or right around the same time. They fought against his groups again in 2007 and 8. And then, but to what effect? He's still one of the most powerful leaders among the Shia supermajority in Iraq right now. And so, you know, we talk about the whole thing as, you know, just they shouldn't have sent the cavalry into Iraq at all, but they surely didn't need to send them into Sadr City that day. They didn't need to shut down Muqtada al-Sadr's newspaper. They were fighting a war for him. Surely they could have negotiated.
Well, also, that's what you said is all true and exactly what to what now the U.S. is arming and training ISIS, just make that the umbrella for, you know, the terrorist rebels there in the Middle East. But it's also worth remembering, I think, that on April 1st, 3 days before Casey was killed, Blackwater mercenaries were, you know, they were killed and hung off a bridge in Fallujah. Mm-hmm. And the Fallujans, if that's how you say that, mm-hmm. The people in Iraq who live in Fallujah, they were tired of Blackwater's brutality in their community. And so when they had a chance, they rebelled. And I think part of that rebellion also spread to Sadr City mm-hmm. by April 4th.
Right. And, you know, of course, as Ray McGovern likes to point out, the riot in which the Blackwater guards got caught up and lynched there was in response to the Israeli drone strike or airstrike assassination of Sheikh Yassin, who they had abetted in helping to create Hamas and affect the rise of Hamas in the first place to be a right-wing religious alternative to the PLO. But mm-hmm. they decided they didn't like him anymore. And when they right. assassinated him, that was what caused the riot in Fallujah, where those Blackwater guards got lynched, which then became the justification for our current Secretary of Defense, James Mattis, and his Marines attack on crazy. Fallujah, which, as you're saying, yeah, broke out at the same
Isn't
time.
Isn't it then, crazy how all these people are coming back?
Yep.
I mean, Trump, I can't believe there were some people that were pro-peace or anti-war that actually thought Trump was going to be. And, you know, Trump probably has not been as vicious as Clinton would have been, but still he surrounded himself with the same people, Mattis, now John Bolton. And it was it a coincidence that soon after John Bolton came back into you know, this freak show that the US upped its bombing in Syria and has sent more ships, and now there's so-called exercises being run by the Marine Expeditionary Force in Jordan. So it just really is a never-ending cycle. And
hey, the Wall Street Journal says that, thank God, well, they don't put it this way, I do, assuming their reporting is right, that thank God Mad Dog Mattis, the butcher of Fallujah, is there, because he's the one who convinced Donald Trump to not hit Iranian or Russian targets, and that what we ought to do is just, like we did last year, we'll throw a few missiles at a few sites for show, and we'll talk real tough, but we're not going to do anything capital S stupid here. So,
well,
thank God the cool, patient wisdom of this war criminal was there to prevail over John Bolton and Donald Trump himself.
Well, and I think this is just like the definition of wag the dog, because from what I also understand, Putin helped coordinate these attacks to help the United States save face, but not hurt Syria too badly, or Russian troops who happen to be there. So this is all just for show. It's just wag the dog. And, you know, the people, we're the ones that are suffering. If we don't have loved ones like my family that have been killed, or the over million people in Iraq, and we don't even count the civilians. If we don't have this kind of personal tragedy, this country is suffering. You know, it's really being turned into an S-hole, like what Donald Trump likes to call it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we really need to, like, stop this from the bottom up. It's not going to stop from the top down. It's not going to stop by voting these maniacs in or out of office. We've been voting now. The United States has been voting for over two centuries, and here we are. So what are we going to do to stop it? Voting got us into this mess. It's not going to get us out of this mess.
All right. Well, now listen. So I think some might mistakenly think that you've just gone away and quit being anti-war during Obama times, but I know that that is certainly not right, that you've done your best. But now that there's a Republican in there, it seems like you at least have a good chance of trying to help to revive the anti-war, you know, liberals and progressives. The real leftists have stayed anti-war and anti-Democrat this whole time. But, you know, the rank and file out there, the broad American left, were bribed by Obama's personality, I guess, and his identity into shutting their mouths for 8 years. But now you are doing this new march on the Pentagon, the women's march on the Pentagon. So is this going to be all pussy hats and stupid stuff, or what is this? Tell me. Tell me something good. I want to hear it. I want to be excited about this.
This is really in reaction to the pussy hat parade, I like to call them. And for 2 years, the pussy hat parade has been doing huge demonstrations against Trump. And of course, it's just against Trump. It's not against the system. And a few of us principled people on the left, and there have been, there really relatively have been a precious few of us that have been principled this whole time. But especially this year, when they started to organize or started to promote, because I don't think they ever stop organizing, getting all their millions of dollars in donations and stuff. And I'm talking about the Women's March. Particularly this year, when they started promoting it without having war as the single most devastating issue to women in the world as one of their pieces of their platform, I started to challenge them even more than I did last year, because last year my sister died on the day of the first Pussy Hat Parade. And so I was thinking of other things at that moment. But anyway, this year I started to challenge them even more vocally than I had before. And one of the organizers commented to me, she said, Cindy, we know war is your issue and we appreciate that, but the Women's March will never address war as long as women aren't free. And so,
yeah, we just need to make more of them military officers. That's real equality and freedom.
Right.
We like Princess Leia. She's not a princess anymore. Now she's a general. That's feminism fully realized, American style, 2017, 18 era.
Yeah. And so my response is, what you mean is until the most privileged class of women in the world, white female Democrats, are free. And you guys are already free. So it really is up to you to, it's up to us.
I'm just so embarrassed for our civilization. I mean, there's all the guilt and all that too, but it's just embarrassing, isn't it?
It really
I'm sorry.
Is
I just am mortified. Seriously.
So we think that in the Women's March on the Pentagon, we believe that we have to be in solidarity with all women and all oppressed people and occupied people around the world. We're an internationalist march. We don't believe any of us are free until we are all free. And so and the anti-war movement really didn't come back, Scott, last year. I was kind of shocked because I believe, and I have believed for a long time, since probably around 2006, that the anti-war movement wasn't really anti-war. They were anti-Republican war. And so I thought, well, the one thing about having Trump come in, at least the people will start to protest his wars again, even though I knew it wouldn't be principled and I knew it would be short-lived until we get another Democrat president. Then, but it didn't happen. And so there were many strong protests, but they weren't, none of them had an anti-war component. There was the environmental march in D.C. in May that gave the anti-war movement lip service, kind of like, here, you can have your little spur of the march over off into this alley. And I'm not even kidding about that. And, yeah, you know, a lot of things. Yeah, it is. And you know, excuse me, environmentalists have to recognize that the Pentagon is the number one polluter in the world.
Right.
And so.
And they consume as much fossil fuels as like Germany. You know, they're like third in rank of nation states, if that's your concern. Right. You know, as you said, I mean, this certainly isn't my issue, but on your blog, I saw where you said gun control begins at the Pentagon. Hey, environmentalism does too. You know,
well, you know, we're
freedom and peace and justice for all and everything begins at the Pentagon.
Yeah. And I'm not, you know, I am not for gun control either in the masses. I believe that it's a mistake to disarm the people when the cops and the military are so armed. I just, even though I don't own any guns, I think it's a real mistake, and it's a terrible issue to me. It's a terrible issue to organize around, especially when the U.S. military, like Martin Luther King Jr. said, is the biggest purveyor of violence in the world.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just so naive, right? And I remember being a kid and kind of thinking, just from the way they talk about it on TV, not really thinking, but just being under the impression that, so I guess you pass some laws and then all these guns go away and all the murders stop or something. But I was 12, and that's stupid. You know, that's not how the reality is at all. Gun control laws just means people sitting in prison for simply having a gun and not even doing anything wrong to anyone with it. What the hell is that? That's crazy. That's not, you know, protecting people's lives. That's destroying them.
Well, absolutely. And I think, you know.
Anyway, sorry for that tangent. I just had to agree with you about that.
Okay. But, I, you know, just call me, you know, conspiracy theorist. But I don't really believe the U.S. government has our best interests at heart.
You're so cynical.
You know? I know, aren't I?
So listen now, but so now here's the thing about the anti-war left. Like, they got to find a way to come slinking back, right? They got to come back and be able to be anti-war without being embarrassed for being silent for 8 years. But then again, apparently they're all pretty shameless, so it shouldn't be too hard if we can get them to rally around the right thing. Except a big part of the problem is all the partisanship, of course, with this guy being the devil incarnate, and the central set of accusations against him are that he's an agent of a foreign power, and that, you know, rather than being some American, you know, super patriot to a fault who bombs people every day, the problem is that he doesn't bomb people enough. And whenever he stops doing anything horrible, all the headlines blare, in a move sure to please the Russians. You know, that was even what the Washington Post said when he called off the CIA program back in Al-Qaeda in Syria. They go, oh, yeah, well, Putin's going to like that. And so it just has twisted the whole concept. It's not, they're not attacking him. He doesn't fit that George Bush position. Now what's wrong with him is that he's not George Bush. As you said earlier, they're rehabilitating Bush. Bush was a compassionate conservative, centrist, moderate, who didn't use the N-word and wasn't, you know, just outright a jerk to everyone the way that Trump is. So what's wrong with Trump? He's an outsider, and so whatever's wrong with him is wherever he breaks with the centrist consensus, and the centrist consensus is kill, 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 all day, every day, and new Cold War with Russia and the works.
Right. Well, I remember, was it last year, around this time, when the U.S. bombed the airstrip in Syria, and all the pundits said, well, now he's acting presidential. What the heck does that say about our country? But I want to comment on something that you said. What they, the so-called left, were shameless Obama supporters for 8 years of his scandalous wars. Really, Scott, we're building the anti-war movement from scratch right now. Yeah. And I was in 5 cities back east. And I basically told the people, I don't want to say that it's you people who came out to my event, but it's your fault for not protesting Obama's wars. So what we're facing in Syria today, what we're facing with China, North Korea, Russia, is really the fallout of not remaining principled anti-war activists for really since 2006. So here we have to get back up to speed. And if what Trump is doing is wrong, then it was wrong when Obama was president, because Obama really was Bush on steroids. He took 2 wars and expanded them to 7. And being the overachiever that he is, and people were silent. Right. And we just had anti-war rallies around the country in this past weekend. And from what I understand, they were pathetically attended.
Yeah. Well, now, I saw something that I think it was a press release about your upcoming march that had a list of a lot of groups on there.
Yeah, we have.
Have you had much success in getting people to sign other groups to sign up and promise to be there?
Yes, we have really are generating a lot of positive excitement about this. We do have a really long list of endorsers, individuals, and groups. And what we really want is not to get people's names, but to get people to mobilize. And I was in D.C., Boston, New York, Manhattan, Long Island, and Philadelphia, and not Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Lancaster, and all of these cities are already mobilizing to get buses of people to come. I started there because I knew that they were cities where people could get buses and carpools easily to get to Washington. And of course, Washington, D.C., they don't have to. They just take the metro or whatever to get to these protests. So we do have a lot of excitement that is being generated. The opposition that we have, we do have some of the establishment. I like to call it the peace industrial complex groups that are more Democrat controlled or funded by.
You mean like Vote Vets and stuff like that? Move on.
Yeah, things like, well, yeah, Move On would never be on my side. But there are some anti-war groups that are in opposition. And I don't think it's so much of the women's part, because we really have made it very clear that everybody is welcome. It's just that women are going to be organizing this event. I think it's more.
And you're talking with Vets for Peace, right?
Yeah, people are more opposed to it because we're having it before the midterm election. And it's like a couple weeks before the midterm election. And I've heard people say, this march will hurt the Democrats. And I said, well, if you're afraid that a peace march is going to hurt your political party, then you need a new party if you are actually against wars.
Right. Yeah, we don't want to make Nancy Pelosi look bad or anything. Because, you know.
That's exactly what they said in 2008 when they were organizing the 5-year anniversary of the invasion of Iraq, organizing something in Washington, D.C. Some of us wanted to have a march to oppose the wars. And that was in 2008. The opposition to this was, you're going to embarrass the Democrats.
All right, guys, here's who supports this show. The War State by Mike Swanson, the great Mike Swanson. He'll give you great investment advice, too, at wallstreetwindow.com. His book, The War State, is about the rise of the military-industrial complex after World War II in the Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy administrations. You'll learn a hell of a lot. It's really great. And again, wallstreetwindow.com to find out what he thinks you need to do with your money in these volatile times. And I'm sure some of what he'll tell you is you got to have at least some percentage of your savings in precious metals. And when you go to get your precious metals, you go to Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. That's rrbi.co. rrbi.co. And if you buy with Bitcoin, they take no premium at all. Of course, then there's Zencash, zensystem.io, to read all about how it works. It's a brand new digital currency. It's also a format for sending encrypted messages and documents, and has all kinds of great things going for it. I know digital cash people who really think it's great. Zencash at zensystem.io. And Hussein Badakhshani is back. He wrote this great book, No Dev, No Ops, No IT. And it's about how to run your technology business like a libertarian. No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. And expanddesigns.com. You want a brand new website? 2018 model looks good for everybody if you're looking at. You go to expanddesigns.com/Scott and you save $500. Now, so here's the thing, and I don't know if this really makes sense from others' points of view, but it's kind of a hang-up of mine. Is I always regretted that all the big left-wing marches against the war back in 2003 and in the Bush Jr. years, they always seemed so tone-deaf to the idea that maybe some right-wingers agreed with them, too. And I'm not speaking for myself because I'm no kind of right-winger. But right. You know who's a right-winger is Pat Buchanan and Daniel Larrison at the American Conservative Magazine. And, some people like that. And it always seemed to me like partisanship gets in the way of this. But it seemed to me like it would be really wise if leftists could get up on the stage at their anti-war rally and say, listen, we're so right that these right wingers agree with us just because yeah. We're right. And they can't help but admit that we're right. And so instead of saying, oh, no, it's a horrible Donald Trumpian thing to want to stop backing CIA, have the CIA back in Al-Qaeda in Syria. Go ahead and accentuate the positive and non-interventionist or anti-interventionist, anti-nation-building, anti-global policeman of the world type aspects of conservatism, and invite guests that represent those points of view to really show by example that you don't have to be Cindy Sheehan, the leftist, to be anti-war. You could be, Ron Paul and be just as anti-war as Cindy Sheehan, and for a lot of the same reasons, all the best ones.
Right. Well, we're calling our march a nonpartisan march on the bipartisan war machine. And so
that's a great way to put it. Who coined that?
Yeah.
You?
This is interesting because I tell people, if you feel like you have to vote, if there's some kind of weird thing and you've been, abused by the system into thinking that your vote matters and that you have to go vote. I vote Scott and I've run for office before. I just don't think that those are the most effective ways to change things, obviously. And so I said, go vote for a Democrat, go vote for a Republican, go vote for a Green, whatever you feel like you have to vote. But recognize that it's the street heat that's going to. And, if you have a class-based analysis of the problem, there are Republicans, right-wingers, left-wingers, communists, whatever, in let's just call it the 99%. There's like, so everybody's in the 99%, and we're not going to defeat the 1% if we keep factionalized. We just had an anti-war event in Orinda, California, and I was one of the speakers, but we had Ron Paul send a video. Do you know that there were people who refused to attend because Ron Paul had a video there? And he kept his comments to being anti-war and anti-empire. And the name of our conference was Stop the War Machine, Save the Planet.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's what is really regretful too, is all the attacks on Ron, like he's some kind of beyond the pale, extra mean right winger, are all so hollow and made up.
Well,
and
I,
fake.
You know, I don't agree
I hate
with that
Paul. So much. You know what I mean? Like, what do they think is going to happen? He's already out of Congress. You know what I mean? Like, them witnessing him also be right is going to do what to hurt them?
Right.
You know?
Well, I don't agree with everything, obviously, but you know, on this issue, we have been really,
if Jesse Helms was anti-war, you would still know that he's a horrible bastard in every way. And okay, well, it's good that he agrees with me on this, but Ron Paul is a very decent gentleman. You know what I mean? Even if you disagree with him on X, Y, and Z, he's still a good person, and he clearly is a committed anti-imperialist. So for leftists to want to give him the cold shoulder like that is just regretful as can be, I think.
It was, you know, it was really regretful, and it was a really good, you know, it was a really good conference, and we had too many speakers, I think, to not show up because you disagree with one is pretty pathetic. And so those are the issues that we're facing. And hey, yeah, we can't even agree on the left about things, you know? Mm-hmm. And so then we bring in this additional complication that we have someone who might be identified on the right. That just brings more complications
right
to the issue.
Yeah, that should be a strength. Everyone should see. I mean, if you really want to end the war, this is the whole thing of the 99%, right? Like, the first rule of the 99% is that 99% of Americans are not radical leftists. So if the point is that the 1%, or really more accurately, the 1% of the 1% rule, and all the rest of us are in the same boat, then, hey, that includes a lot of right-wingers. That includes a lot of Tea Partiers. That includes a lot of people who don't feel like they're represented by either of the major parties at all. That 99% is 300 and something million of us, not the radical left. Come on.
Right. And as someone who I consider to be on the radical left, I have to go now pretty soon, but
good
deal.
Yeah, I'm over time too, but
yeah, for the Women's March on the Pentagon, we are not having little spurs. We're not having the veterans contingent or the, you know, the libertarian contingent or whatever contingent. If you believe that the U.S. empire is the greatest purveyor of violence in the world, if you think the Pentagon has to be stopped, then you are welcome to join us. And I just want to tell people, go to marchonpentagon.com for more information. And like you said, Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Great. That's, yeah, Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.blogspot.com. And marchonthepentagon.com?
MarchOnThePentagon.com.
MarchOnThePentagon.com. All right, great. Thank you so much. It's great to talk to you again, Cindy. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Scott. We'll hopefully it was not so long until we talk again.
I'll see you there.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Right, bye. Hey, I want to add on a special thanks to the heroic Ron Paul, the greatest American hero ever, in my estimation, for interviewing me on his show, The Liberty Report, with the great Dan McAdams as well. It's really great. They interviewed me on Monday. And it ran on today, Wednesday. I don't know what day you guys are hearing this, but ran on Wednesday. You can find it on youtube.com, and I'll blog it and all that. We talked about Syria and Afghanistan and other things, libertarianism. So thanks, Ron. You're great.